numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bin Laden. How you doing, man? You good?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Never going to get called Kelly Bin Laden again.
That.
Okay, we'll stop. Closed caption. That's what he's known as. What a night in college hoops.
Although maybe if you say Bin Laden, the closed captioning will get it right.
Oh, they'll switch it back to Bin Laden? Yeah. All right, maybe so. Nothing but college basketball. Well, I won't say nothing but college basketball, but college basketball heavy today. Of course, Dallin Cuff joins us again from ESPN's Daily Wager and all throughout the ESPN sort of breadth of shows related to college hoops. Former Columbia basketball player. We'll talk March Madness with him, Sweet 16 yesterday and today. Will Hill, who won our Circa College Basketball Challenge, will join us as well to give his thoughts. FAU is who he had in the Final Four on the Megapod.
Let's go, baby!
One game away. Congratulations to your buddy Ken LaVica, who was on the show yesterday. Their play-by-play guy who has endured many a poor season to get to this point. They are one game away after their win yesterday against Tennessee. Try to muddy it up again, did you, Tennessee? No. Couldn't do it. And Adam Burke joins us. Adam Burke not bumped. Adam Burke, college basketball, baseball. We'll talk to one of the key cogs of the VSiN wheel, Adam Burke, a little later on the show. Let me just start. There's so many things to get to from last night. One, let me just start with Survivor. Sean, hit it.
I'm a survivor.
Thank you. But here's the thing with that. Yes, I survived, but not with the good entry. So, Kelly, 1,660 entries in my Survivor pool. If Michigan State wins last night, they lose in overtime to Kansas State, I'm in third. And you know, you'd think I'd be distraught about this. But you just have to tip your cap to Marquise Noel.
Kansas State
beats Michigan State. They end up, by the way, they end up winning by five. That last bucket at the end of overtime destroyed Michigan State's second half bettors, who had Sparty at minus one. It was a brutal beat for them. Sort of under the radar, brutal beat. But Marquise Noel pitched a perfect game. Like, if this was baseball, we'd be talking about this as a perfect game. First of all, an NCAA tournament record. NCAA tournament record, 19 assists, 18 the previous record for Mark Waite of UNLV back in the national semis against Keith Smart's Indiana team, the eventual champions back in 87. Marquise Noel not only had gets the record with 19 assists, but he made every correct decision on every single possession, it seemed like, last night, whether it was a dime or a shot of his own. And so you kind of have to tip your cap. Like, if you had Michigan State, and it knocks me out of the good Survivor entry, we'll get to the other one momentarily, you tip your cap. By the way, did you have any objection with Tom Izzo's comments after the game? He's getting a lot of criticism for this. I thought he was pitch perfect. I thought he was refreshingly honest when he said, give Kansas State credit. They banked in two shot clock threes. They made some big plays, but some of those big plays weren't big plays. They were lucky plays. Well, I mean, that is true. I mean, because in addition to pitching the perfect game for Marquise Noel, they did have two ridiculously lucky sort of like play clock buzzer-beating banked threes. But hey, that's basketball, and he was very honest. The quote went on, sometimes that works out for him, sometimes it doesn't. I thought it was great.
I didn't hear that part, but I think this is where it's so easy. When a coach gets up there for 20 minutes to speak post-game, it's so easy to pick and choose things that make him look good, make him look kind of bad. And that, all I know, I saw the part where he was talking about how, I mean, Noel was incredible, unstoppable. They couldn't do anything about him, gave him so much credit that that's where, no, I don't have a problem with him making those kind of comments later.
That kid was incredible. Marquise Noel, the toast of Manhattan, Kansas, and the toast of Manhattan, since he's from New York City. How many times did they call him a New York City point guard last night?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
By the way.
That alley-oop, though. Oof.
Oh, with the one where he's talking to the coach.
I still don't even understand exactly because allegedly on the one play, he was shouting to the crowd, right, watch this, and yelling with the coach.
Well, no. So the play that you're talking, the play that was in question, people are wondering, was it designed or not, is he and Jerome Tang, who's Kansas State's coach, as Marquise Noel is yo-yoing the dribble very calmly, you know, sort of coming up with how are we going to run this play. And so there's two sides of this. One side of it believes that it was just this feigned argument, or not feigned heat, sort of, you know, not quite a calm discussion, an argument about what they should run. And it was designed to distract the defense, which it did, because then Michigan State fell asleep on D, and there was your alley-oop. The other side of it, and Jay Wright had this side of it on the broadcast, in the studio at CBS. He's like, no, trust me. And he goes to the New York City point guard thing, and he's like, the coach is saying one thing, and Marquise Noel, who has earned the right to really debate that kind of thing on the court, is like, no, we're doing this. He thought it was a legit sort of exchange between coach and point guard, coach and quarterback, if you will. And then while this is going on, Noel just happens to notice while it's happening, oh, well, we got this. This overrides everything, and there's your lead back for Kansas State.
Okay. I mean, I think it was all planned, but it's 10 times better if they were actually arguing with each other, and then he throws that up.
I kind of believe that. I kind of believe it was legit. Or arguing in a basketball sense, right?
Right, like,
you know, not going after each other. But again, so there goes the good survivor play that could have been in third place out of 1,660 entries, which you'd think I'd be distraught about. But again, tip of the cap, because it was just such an amazing performance by the kid. And then the other part of this is there was carnage last night. Most people had Tennessee. So those 1,660 are now down to 132, of which I do have one. But this gets into survivor strategy. If Michigan State had won and I was in third place, Kelly, I would absolutely be playing Creighton tonight. But because I'm just another entry of the 132, as small as 132 is, I think I kind of have to play Princeton and just pray and be willing to just grab out. I just think that's how you have to play it. Because otherwise, there's no point.
Yeah,
otherwise, there's no point.
So tournament on the line tonight for Gil Alexander.
By the way, I have the one remaining future I have is Creighton. So if Creighton gets out, I still have that live. Speaking of the other future that went down, that was, I mean, as great as that Michigan State-Kansas State game was, and it was as classic as a Sweet 16 game can get, that Gonzaga-UCLA game was fairly incredible as well. UCLA is winning this game relatively comfortably. And just, let's just go back to the key moments of this game. From 12:34 left, from 12 minutes and 34 seconds left in this game, when UCLA was up 7, 59-52, to the 1:14 mark, that's 11 minutes and 20 seconds, UCLA did not make one shot from the field. And their 7-point lead was cut to 7 at 1:14 left on a Jaime Jaquez 3 the hard way to cut it to 6, and then after the free throw to cut it to 6. They exchanged two free throws. It was 72-66 Gonzaga at that point. They exchanged two free throws, both sides do, 74-68. Then Malachi Smith throws the ball away for Gonzaga. Jaquez with another three-point play the hard way, 74-71. 41 seconds left now. It's a one-possession game, and Will McClendon commits a foul for UCLA. And I guess I was amongst a bunch of folks. I'm sure millions of people were thinking this. Why did you foul there?
Yeah.
But they did. And it ended up kind of working out because Anton Watson only hits one of the two free throws. Jaquez with a layup to cut it to 2, 75-73. Then they have to foul, UCLA does. David Singleton fouls Drew Timmy with 25 seconds left. Gonzaga up by 2. Timmy misses both, including the first one, which was barely just hit, grazed the rim. I'm like, oh, he's feeling the moment. And so UCLA gets the rebound. Amari Bailey from 3 with 12 seconds left. Splash! And UCLA's up 1, 76-75. And I'm like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I got to review this. Like, I don't think I've even processed what just took place.
Well, it felt like two different games from that, like, 10-minute slog.
Yes.
Right? And then after that, it was like, bam, 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 bam.
And I'm like, are we going to get out of this game with this ticket? My God. And then the play that just, I mean, you're going to remember this for a long time. Gonzaga, with 12 seconds left, they come down court. And they run what Mark Few later called the Jay Wright play. So Hunter Salas dribbles the ball up the floor, then he flips it to Julian Strother, a trailing Julian Strother, who from the logo
the logo.
Hits the shot and then flexes to the crowd. Bang! 78-76 Gonzaga. UCLA still has a chance, but Tiger Campbell turns it over, and that's it. That's all she wrote with just over a second left. Strother hits one free throw, with just under 2 seconds left, and that's how it ends. Gonzaga by three. But that play is a tribute to, you, everyone will remember it, the 2016 NCAA championship, when Mark Few called the Jay Wright play. By the way, Strother has done this already this year in the BYU game. That was the one where... Is it Archie Diacono flipped it to Chris Jenkins. It wasn't nearly as long of a shot, remember. It wasn't from the logo, but it was from behind the arc. And Chris Jenkins, this was after Marcus Page had just hit this double-clutch three for Carolina to tie the game with 4.7 seconds left in that championship. And then Villanova comes down. They do the same thing. Diacono just flips it back to Chris Jenkins. Ball game. Jay Wright's a champion. Jay Wright, by the way, with no reaction to his championship. Do you remember that? He's like, yeah. In his suit. He's like, yeah, we just won the championship. But that's what that was. It looked to the naked eye last night. It's like, did they just run a play where they were going for the offensive rebound? Like, was that play?
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's just going to chuck it up, and there's going to be a long bounding rebound, and somebody's going to get, that's the play. Instead, he just nails it.
I had some buddies texting one of my friends. I know they mentioned something like this on the broadcast to my friends. Like, you can't go underneath the screen there. I'm like, he's from the logo. Like, what the heck? Of course you go underneath
yes,
it there.
You do go under the screen. Oh, UCLA, what could have been had Jalen Clark played? Oh, had he not gotten injured. Dallin Cuff on the other side. More hoops next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Won't take you but a few seconds. Then you stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. That won't take you but a few minutes. And then you start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Bam! Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander. Let me just read a couple tweets here. We get tweets before we get to Dallin. Mike Stacks, MSU K-State. Was a fantastic game, but were you frustrated like me with how Izzo would not change his defense, as Michigan State all night had an issue with the pick and roll? No defenders under the hoop, and all guys up towards the free throw line, maybe a zone or something. It was a peculiarly bad defensive game for Michigan State, but again, like, Marquise Noel pitched a perfect game. Like, I cannot say it enough. If you are a basketball head, that was perfection. Every decision was perfect. And then on top of it, the luck of the banked threes as well. Sure, that existed as well. But yes, it did feel like Michigan State was it was a poor defensive game for them, at least on that side of the court. Forrest Lehman goes the other way. He said Izzo also made comments, in addition to the ones I mentioned earlier, that he didn't think his team played that well. Are you kidding? This is from Forrest Lehman. He said, best game they played this year, hands down. And he doubled down on the luck comment. Not a fan. That's from Forrest Lehman on Tom Izzo's comments after the game. Let's bring in Dallin Cuff from ESPN, ESPN's Daily Wager, specifically for our purposes. Former ball player at Columbia, where he yo-yoed the dribble, tickled the strings many nights very well for Columbia. And Dallin, first of all, thank you for joining us once again. Appreciate it.
Pleasure to be on with you guys. Appreciate the intro. Let me just comment real quick on Noel and your listeners' tweet there. I would think with a lot of times we associate college basketball with the coaches so easily. Izzo is a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. But the players win, as Coach K always said, and the players also sometimes lose. When you go back and watch some of the passes Marquise Noel threw, Kansas State is a great cutting team, and they cut off the ball, looking for the ball at all points in time. A lot of Michigan State defenders at times just fell asleep. No better example than the backdoor lob, you know, for his, 18th assist or something, Keontae Johnson. But there were other times where they're coming off pick and rolls, the weak side defender falling asleep, and then cutting behind him for a bounce pass layup, for a lob. It's an element of Noel's got unbelievable vision, unbelievable delivery. They know that they're going to cut and look for the ball, and he can find him. And at the same time, Michigan State, the little things, the details, ball you man, seeing your man, was lost a lot of times. And when you lose him, he makes you pay. And so Izzo can't control all that. Yes, their ball screen defense and the coverages should have been changed up more, should have been varied. but it's also just basic fundamental defending fell apart at times, and they make you pay for it.
Yeah, and I don't want to go crazy hyperbole on this, but like people are already comparing it to like the great moments in Madison Square Garden history. Willis Reed, who just passed away, obviously, in Madison Square Garden lore for just showing up on the court and hitting a couple buckets injury and lifting the Knicks to the championship in Game 7. Reggie Miller, 8 points in 9 seconds. Jordan's double nickel. Last night was up there, man. That was incredible from him.
It was remarkable, and I do think I lived in New York for a long time. It's a tough town. They'll embrace the hell out of you, and they'll forget you in a second, too. So it's weird that like he put that performance in. It's almost like he has to not perform like that again, but if they get to the Final Four, it's like that story is completed. Like his New York City return to home. He's a Harlem kid. And like that is the storybook ending, but you kind of need that to write it as properly as it should be. That performance will always be remembered, but then to take them to the Final Four in Jerome Tang's first year, winning both games in the Garden, you know, beating a kind of a Cinderella team in FAU as well, it's a remarkable story. But that performance last night is an all-time tournament performance. When you put it up in the pantheon of Garden performances, that does hit a different level.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get to tonight's game, I want to ask you about a couple other things from last night. And the one we brought up in the first segment also, Gonzaga's game-winning shot. The fact that Mark Few called it the Jay Wright play, tribute to the 2016 NCAA championship, how that ended. And this was just Julian Strother from the logo, Dallin. Like, were you as stunned in the moment as most people were?
Yeah, I yelled no right away, like probably most coaches. Okay, good shot. Good shot.
Good shot.
Wow.
Good shot.
I could not.
Yeah.
And I mean, my coach was my high school coach. Is great. No. Yes. Okay. Like, you have to live with some stuff that's kind of crazy at times with guys that are really special. And in that play, and Few said it afterwards, they run the pitch back because, I mean, you drive at your teammate's defender. You pitch it back. That's going to give him kind of a run, a little bit of a downhill start. You're going to get basically a step on your defender to get to the lane. It's a one-point game. Get to the lane. Like, I could not believe he just caught it and shot it. Now, he buried it. It was a hell of a shot. They say they work on it all the time, but that was not the intention. But he's a special player, made a huge play. For those of us that had Gonzaga on the money line, thank you very much, Julian Strother. That was a massive shot, to say the least. But I was very surprised that he pulled that shot in that moment where, I mean, I thought he had the angle to get to his strong hand, to get down the lane line, and to create a play or create contact at the rim, which is what you're looking for.
What a moment. It was, like I said, it was almost like they were playing for an offensive rebound. It was just unbelievable. Well, in the interest of time, we'll skip the UConn route of Arkansas. But let me just ask you about Florida Atlantic. And the general question, I guess, to you, Dallin, would be, have you allowed yourself to now graduate to they could actually win the whole thing?
I'm not there because they're on Bama's side of the bracket. And I really don't. I don't see them beating Alabama. I think they're a very good team. I also don't see them beating Kansas State, but I think it's going to be a very good game. They could beat Kansas State. I think the talent, not just the talent disparity, because FAU is good. It's more like the length, the athleticism, a little bit of the defensive versatility that may cause Florida Atlantic some problems when you get to Alabama. I think from a physical standpoint, they're better. They're better suited. They're closer suited to Kansas State. Their guard play was great. They had huge performances last night. They defended very well, and they ran into a Tennessee team that we know can struggle to score. And that's exactly what Tennessee played into a team. They are who they are. They defended really well in the first half, but when they couldn't get stops in the second half, they couldn't make shots in the second half, that allowed FAU to get out and play a little bit of transition. Russell went nuts for a minute there and really just turned the tide of the game, and they just don't have the offensive capability. Florida Atlantic's a very good team. They could easily win this game against Kansas State. I just can't think they could win the whole thing, just because you got to go through Bama, and I don't think they're capable of doing that.
All right.
I think they're going to go through Bama, let's say that.
The two Elite Eight games that have already been established, they're two-point spreads. K-State, a two-point favorite over FAU, and UConn, a two-point favorite over Gonzaga is where it stands now. Do those numbers seem right to you?
Interesting. I do think Kansas State has been disrespected this whole time. I think to every network that I've been on the last week since the Kentucky line came out, That was a brand name favorite for Kentucky, and then I said the same thing with Michigan State. I thought Kansas State had a better resume with more difficult competition, with better players on the floor, and I think all that holds true now. I realize I would probably think maybe a 3-point line would be more aligned to what I think is going to play out. But FAU has good computer numbers. They performed all very well in a Conference USA. They've won 30 plus games. They're capable, but I'm going to keep riding K-State. I'll take those 2 points any day of the week right now.
All right, and then tonight.
In terms of the other side of UConn,
oh, yeah,
with UConn real quick, UConn's been dominant, to say the least. this is going to be an interesting game because Gonzaga's difference last night was they defended in the second half. The first half was a joke, dude. UCLA got wherever they wanted.
Yeah.
And Tiger Campbell controlled that game. The middle ball screen was – they were just feasting on it. It was a joke. Second half, they defended better, and they crushed them on the offensive glass. And that's what demoralized UCLA a little bit and wore them down. With the lack of depth, when you keep guarding and guarding, that's hard. They had 16 offensive rebounds in the game, and that was big for Gonzaga. So the glass is big. Timmy Sanogo matchup is absolutely huge. I think UConn should be the favorite in this game. I think about 2 points is right. This could be a fantastic basketball game. Conn is playing at a high level, but so is Gonzaga the last 5 or 6 weeks. They've been very good, so this is a great game.
Kansas State giving the two, UConn giving the two, just to clarify, in the two Elite Eight games. Tonight, four games, obviously, to round out the Sweet 16, each of which, with the exception of the Xavier-Texas game, is north of a touchdown in favor of Alabama, Houston, and Creighton, respectively, and then Texas favored by 4.5 over Xavier. What do you like best?
I like Miami best. I mean, talking about being disrespected all year. They were getting points in a lot of games, especially on the road in ACC, so they won straight up. And I'm not sure they can beat Houston, but I really think they can keep it close. What's unique about this team, and I don't like to use the word unique, you know, it should not be used. It should be used sparingly, as it said. They have three or four guys on the court at all points in time that can go get a bucket for themselves or their teammate. And in college basketball, that's pretty rare. Like, you usually don't have three or four dudes that can do that. You usually have one or two or maybe three if you're lucky. But they usually have three or four. And they have Norshad Omier in the middle that dominated and demoralized Trace Jackson Davis and the Indiana star, you know, All-American in their last game. He had 8 offensive rebounds, 17 overall. Controlling the glass is huge. If you can keep Houston to one shot, the top 5 in the league in offensive rebounding percentage, that's big for the scoreline, but bigger for their pace of the game. Miami wants to play it up and down. Houston wants to walk it up and down unless they get a turnover. So Miami getting the ball at the rim and playing, I think they're going to be able to score enough. Houston obviously is elite defensively, and they've put that on display last week against Auburn. But give me the 7.5. I'll take 7.5, and I think the Canes can cover that. Not sure they can win that thing, but 7.5 is a lot for a very good Miami team that continues. Remember, a lot of these guys were in the Elite Eight last year. Like, they know what it takes to get there, and they feel like they've been disrespected on the path there again. As Jordan Miller said before the tournament, when everybody's picking Drake, you didn't believe in us last year, why would you this year? And they've been rolling.
Dallin, I got to run, but I need a yes or no answer. Princeton, puncher's chance to win? Puncher's chance?
Puncher's chance. Love the 10 points, though. Think it's a good matchup for them with Colt Brenner having to play away from the basket.
Okay. All right. Sounded like a puncher's chance with a 10. Thank you, Dallin. Great talking to you, as always. Dallin Cuff, everybody, from ESPN, ESPN's Daily Wager. We'll come back. Championship formula update. We'll also do some top 10s in golf and tennis. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get everything you need to bet on baseball this season with our MLB betting guide. It's available now and has futures, team previews, and best bets. Steve Mackinnon with power ratings on every team, plus Adam Burke breaking down how the new MLB rules will impact bettors. Whether you bet baseball every day or looking for valuable futures bets, our betting guide has it all. Sign up today and get full access to VSiN for 30 days for only $19 at vsin.com/subscribe. There's Shohei on the cover, or as Kelly Billen says,
Shohei.
Shohei. Shohei. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Billen. It's a numbers game. I could talk college basketball for 4 hours this morning. We will have Will Hill, the winner of the Circa College Basketball Contest, gets Cabana. Going to have himself a Cabana over there at Circa at Stadium Swim. Wonder if he'll invite us to the Cabana, do you think?
Maybe.
Maybe, if we're lucky. He'll be on the show later. He'll be on the show later to talk college hoops with us, as will Adam Burke a little later on. Appreciate Dallin Cuff coming on. I guess we should check into the championship formula and see where we stand. Again, tried and true through the years on this show, both here and on the Beating the Book podcast and Betting Dork before that. 6 criteria that has produced almost every single champion, with rare exception, in college hoops through the years. Last 32 champs, more assists than turnovers. Seems simple enough. Bama barely gets by on that. I think it's like a 1.09 ratio. 31 of the last 32 champs had a head coach with Sweet 16 experience. Only Kevin Ollie and the 2014 UConn Huskies the exception, although we have a couple teams that are still alive. Texas, I'm looking at you. And I guess who else in there that also, a UConn. Texas and UConn, that's their only exception right now. We'll get to it. Let's go through the criteria again, guys, if you could throw that back up there. And then there's, of course, you got to have a top 75 strength of schedule. Houston barely qualifying for that. Last 27 champs had a top 75 strength of schedule. 26 of the last 27 champs went into the tournament with at least three wins versus teams in the top 10% of RPI. The UConn Huskies of 2014 were the only exception. And by the way, Jared Earls, shout out, who listens to this show, pointed out that UCLA did not qualify on this. And they did not. And then, of course, the KenPom numbers. 19 of the last 20 champs were top 20 in adjusted offensive efficiency. The UConn Huskies of 2014, the only exception, number 39 in adjusted offense. And 19 of the last 20 were in the top 20 in adjusted defensive efficiency. Only the 2021 Baylor Bears, who finished 22nd in adjusted defense at KenPom, the exception there. And so the two teams on the inside right now that qualify, Alabama has qualified the whole way. Barely getting there on assist-to-turnover ratio, but nonetheless have qualified the whole way. 545 assists, 498 turnovers. Nate Oates has been to a Sweet 16 as their head coach. They're 18th adjusted offense, number 3 adjusted defense. Houston is in there, perhaps the most entrenched, except for the fact that they barely get there on strength of schedule. Barely. According to net rating, number 73 in strength of schedule. But they're 9th in adjusted offense, 4th in adjusted defense. Kelvin Sampson's been to, you know, 6 Sweet 16s in his life. And beyond, it should be pointed out. These are the three teams on the outside looking in, though. We mentioned UConn and Texas. UConn and Texas, the only exception for them, the only reason they're not on the inside and are just on the outside looking in, and they will forever be on the outside looking in this year, unless they win it all and they'll be the exception. Dan Hurley's never taken a team to the Sweet 16 for UConn. Rodney Terry has never taken a team to the Sweet 16, obviously, interim head coach at Texas. The one team that really could play their way in, though, tonight, if they beat Princeton, very likely that Creighton, who's 22nd adjusted offense and 14th adjusted defense at KenPom, Greg McDermott has been to one Sweet 16 as a head coach. Creighton could very much go alongside Houston and Alabama after tonight.
Right, because that stuff can shift. I'm going to answer, I feel like, a lot of tweets that we've gotten on this for you here. Your criteria for the coaching stuff is heading into this season.
Heading in, yes. Obviously, if you win, right, you've gotten to a Sweet 16.
Yeah, like they're in the Sweet 16. Yes. We get that now. Yes. I feel like we've gotten a lot of tweets about that. But it's going forward for those guys.
That's right. A previous year. This cannot be their first time there. And Kevin Ollie was the only one dating back all those years. Yes, if you go back further in time, you have the Steve Fishers of the world at Michigan, but in the parameters, in the years that we gave, that's the only exception. Here is, by the way, betting market at BetMGM to win it all. Well, kind of jibes with that. Alabama's 3-1. Houston's plus 375. UConn is 5-1. The one exception would be Gonzaga. Gonzaga's plus 550. And then comes Texas and Creighton, both at 10-1. So, yeah, actually, let's talk about some of the teams that didn't qualify in the championship formula and why they don't even get mentioned.
Who's moved the most on these? I don't even know. Has UConn moved the most?
This has been the thing about it hasn't been that much movement. Typically, we'll have teams bouncing in and out. But, like, Gonzaga's first in adjusted offense, but they're 73rd in adjusted defense. So they're not ever qualifying, right? FAU, 26th and 29th adjusted offense and adjusted defense. Pretty solid in both, but Dusty May has never taken a team to the Sweet 16. And K-State, if you're wondering, 35th in adjusted offense, 27th in adjusted defense, but Jerome Tang has never taken a team to the Sweet 16. So there's a lot of, if there really is one theme to this year's formula, it's that there's a lot of coaches who have never been to a Sweet 16 before who are knocking at the door, I believe. Is what people say. K-State, by the way, to win it all, 12-1 now. FAU, 20-1. And then you see the rest of the teams rounding out that with Princeton still having to play tonight, still in the Sweet 16 at 150-1. I think I got to take him in Survivor. Again, had I had the other entry and was in third, I'd play Creighton. But you know what I am out of 132? I'm in 69th out of 132 in the other entry. So it's not nearly as tangible. So I think
you
I have to take Princeton.
I think
let's go, right. Princeton.
Yeah, you got to roll with Princeton.
Just be damned with the result.
As much as I am, I will be rooting on FAU throughout this. I completely agree with Dallin Cuff. That's the...
You agree with his assessment.
I think Tennessee kind of blew that last night, too. Their size advantage was so massive.
Dude, their size. There's no way on paper they should lose a game
like
that.
They shouldn't have. And, like, I understand shooting slumps, but, like, I don't know about you. There were so many times where, I mean, I had an FAU ticket, so I was perfectly fine with them settling for jumpers. But, I'm like, every time you drive to the basket, like, and elevate, you are 2 feet above, like, the you know, the tallest FAU defender. Yeah. Like, you're just missing layups once you get there. So, I don't know. I think there are teams that are going to be able. We are now at the point of the tournament where so all the teams that are left are so good that they're going to run into problems down the road where you not only have, you're not the most talented team anymore in these matchups, and the coaches are going to take advantage of the size advantage.
Well, we killed Tommy Lloyd earlier when Arizona was just terrible against Princeton. We killed Matt Painter in that Purdue game as well against who did Purdue lose? Fairleigh Dickinson, pardon me. And I think it's time to kill Rick Barnes. He had no answers last night. None.
Did he catch some heat last night? Like, I didn't really see.
He didn't.
I was going to say, we were all like, I feel like we were going in, everybody was going into the tournament ready to give him crap.
And then people have sort of silenced because they got this far. But like, there was, I remember after, at a one timeout, like their play that was designed, I was like, that's what they called? Like, I mean, they were so offensively challenged, I'm kind of glad they're gone.
No, I hear you.
I didn't want a team like that winning it.
But when that game got to halftime, I was like, Tennessee screwed up this half. Like, this,
because they were only up five.
This lead should be bigger.
Yes.
And you're letting FAU hang around, right? And then what happened? FAU finally started hitting some of their threes in that second half.
They weren't making anything in the first half. They had great looks, FAU did. They just weren't going down. And that, you're absolutely right. That was the comment. Heading into halftime, I was like, oh, five isn't so bad here.
That is not bad, yeah.
Yeah, and then they started making shots. It's amazing. Basketball is a very simple game, Kelly Bidlin, this baloncesto. You know, if the shots go in, it really does.
It really helps.
It really changes things, you know. It really is a very simple game when it gets down to it. We do have now, I had UCLA that didn't get there last night in the game as well. The only play I have to, I do have Princeton plus the points.
I like it. Backing it up.
Yeah, give me the
points. I mean, I don't like it because
I don't think they're going to win, but I'm just saying, I just feel like, again, this has been the biggest thing this week. One common thing is, everybody has said, well, this has been nice for Princeton, but Creighton is built to beat them badly, and it's going to happen kind of thing. Some variation of that. I don't know. I'll take the points.
See, what I respect about you, Gil, is that you've been one of the bigger Creighton guys all year.
Yes.
But you can
I have a Creighton future.
You can step away for a moment and be like, nobody's talking about this.
Nobody.
Like, nobody's talking about this.
And Creighton is about to be, you know, on the inside in the championship formula too, but I don't know. Like, I've seen too much. And maybe this is muscle memory of even old Princeton teams with Pete Carril. Maybe I'm, like, letting that sap seep into this, which I shouldn't because this ain't Pete Carril's Princeton team. But here they are. They look pretty good to me. Do I expect them to win? Of course not. But I'll take 10 and roll with that, see what happens.
I'm going super chalk tonight. Super chalk parlay. How about this?
You're doing it?
Houston, Creighton, and the Milwaukee Bucks money line parlay.
There you go.
That pays out about minus 110. You're right around there.
What's wrong with that?
I might be laying the points with the Bucks tonight in Utah. They're sitting basically everybody. Golf matchups. I'll hit those on the other side.
We'll do golf matchups. I have four tennis plays after 2-0 yesterday.
We never got to all this, yeah.
We got four dogs in tennis. You like four underdogs in tennis?
Love it.
I got four underdogs. We'll do that, and we'll do our top 10. Let's do a little top 10 golf and tennis rankings. We never do that. We always do it in football. That's on the other side. A little college basketball break before we dive back into it. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's no better time to hit the court for some exciting action in college basketball. Sign up with BetMGM using bonus code, VSiN1000. Place your first bet on March matchups. Sorry, I had to look away to see what it was. If your wager loses, you'll still receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. $1,000! Find out why March is the most magical month in sports and take your shot at thrilling tournament wins. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. U.S. promotional offers not available in Mississippi, Nevada, New York, and Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, Washington, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 877-8-HOPE-NEW YORK or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. In New York, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan.
That's it. He did it. Let's go home.
See you later, everybody. That's all she wrote.
You make that sound so much better than...
It's the greatest promo ever.
We were last Saturday, JVT, I think, made it halfway through that and started coughing, and he was just like, had to shove the paper by. He's like, you finish it. I think like 10 minutes later, that's finally got through it.
That's a lot of states right
there. It's a lot of states. Keeps growing.
Warning to everybody in Las Vegas. It's going to be big traffic this weekend. Swifties are in town. Taylor Swift doing two shows. I think it's tonight and tomorrow night. Is that right, Sean? Tonight and tomorrow night?
Where at?
Allegiant.
Oh, of course.
And Sean McCollum, who's behind the glass here, was saying that the merchandise tent had like a two-hour wait already for people today or yesterday.
You flipping some merch, Sean?
He's flipping some merch. Could you give your current pop music assessment? I love your assessment of current pop music.
My take on current pop music?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I like when people ask me about Taylor Swift, I say, I like Taylor Swift, but like her old stuff when she actually used to be a legit pop star.
Her old stuff.
Now everybody has to be, I don't understand why all pop music now, Gil has to be, everything's like Billie Eilish, and we don't sing anymore, we just whisper.
Oh,
it's like,
it kills
it's
me.
It's like techno music. this is a song, and this is a song. And I'm like, what are they saying? Speak up.
Could you rack that Isaiah downstairs, Kelly, whispering like Billie Eilish. Let's use that later. We get tweets at Beating the Book. By the way, Taylor Swift putting on 3+ hour shows, too. She's Springsteen now.
Whoa.
Yeah, man. Jack Hannon. Hard to question anything Mick Cronin did in that furious comeback last night, but I was surprised there was no one on the ball in the final possession. Then again, the Zags only needed a two, and if you ask Cronin if he could live with that final shot, I'm sure he would say all day, I think you're right, Jack. I exactly what he would say. What can you do? Sometimes you just got to tip your cap.
Pretty shocked Isaiah knows all this, but he just said in my ear that this her first what is it? Her first set is 44 songs.
44. But here's the thing. Like I remember like Janet Jackson had a very short residency here, and I remember thinking I was like, you know who would have a great residency here? Janet Jackson. And then she came. She did residency. I'm like, this is gonna be awesome. Yes, she did like 25 songs too. But you know what she did? After like the first minute and a half, she'd move on to the next song. I couldn't stand it.
My current take on DJs, that's my problem too. I'm like, oh, good, we finally got to a good song. 20 seconds later, it's done. We've moved on.
Drives me crazy. How old are we, by the way, Kelly?
Too old. Get off my lawn!
P-A-W. Noel was excellent, but those two long threes were atrocious and could have been the reason for L. You're right, P-A-W, you're absolutely right. The threes that were just miracle shots. I texted Felica and Will Hill last night. I was like, Kansas State, either by skill, by prayer, or by just the bounce of a ball on every possession, just it all went their way. And good on them. Good on them. By the way, that kid Masood, he couldn't miss.
Oof.
He couldn't miss.
I mean, that shot on the baseline, like that was nail in the coffin.
He was just raining in threes. Rich PSM. Noel and Strother showed that the most important analytic that some guy named Brady had working was heart. Noel overcame height his whole life. Strother was from Vegas and had the loss of his mom, making him motivated and fearless. Ask Tyson versus Buster. We were talking about that with Strother before the show. Sean McCollum and I were about his background here in Vegas. And yeah, man, that was a night of kids that overcame a lot, and good on them.
Amazing moments. Those guys will remember forever. That shot. And the way he stepped into it. Right? It was like with the confidence of Steph. It's like, we've run this play a thousand times.
I was going to say faster than you could say Dame Lillard or Steph Curry.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yep. It's like, we've run this 1,000 times. Let me just, screen, boom, step off, take this shot, and it's in.
You see Few's expression right after, when the turnover happened afterwards and he realized, we're winning this game. Like, even Few was like, you're incredible. It's unbelievable. Guys, this is the thing about March Madness. We lose our Survivor entries. We lose some bets. But is there anything better than this? Is there anything better than this in sports? It's so awesome year after year. It just delivers.
It's amazing. I saw some great tweets last night of like Drew Timmy, and it's like, man, this guy's going to crush it in Lithuania next year, like so hard. Like, that's what I always think about.
Well, I mean, I said it about Achimura and Kispert and all these guys too, and I guess they're hanging on, right? They're playing.
Oh, they're big pieces right now for their teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows? It's tough to project. It's tough to project with these guys. But yes, yes, that is the conventional wisdom for some on Timmy. All right, we got to get to our picks, because a lot of these things will start. So let's do your golf plays.
I think
first.
Power rankings, we got to move back. 8:15. Yes. We'll do those after, yes. Will, because those take too long. Golf matchups for the day. I do have a few. I believe one of these has started already. I am on Russell Henley over Tyrrell Hatton. Look, this is, if you guys heard me on Tuesday, Wednesday, this, you knew I was high on Tyrrell Hatton this week. Reportedly got hurt on his warming up before his first match on Wednesday. He has lost his first two matches. He is out of this entirely. I am playing just a fade against him. I wouldn't even, if, I don't know how bad this injury is. I haven't been able to watch a ton of him actually on the course, but there is a chance he just WDs today. There is a, for anybody out there that is betting golf this morning, Hideki Matsuyama withdrew before his match with Max Homa. So Max Homa advances to the Sweet 16. I do have an outright on him. So good news for Max, bad news for Matsuyama, who seemingly just cannot get healthy here. Russell Henley, I play. Okay, Russell Henley over Tyrrell Hatton. Sungjae Im, I played over Tommy Fleetwood. And then Chris Kirk over Victor Hovland. A couple of these guys just look absolutely, like Hovland, Zalatoris, there are some of these guys, Gil, that they've lost their first two matches. They look completely checked out. They're ready to get on that plane after today and go.
Interesting.
Home. That is
specific to a tournament like this.
Exact. Specific to a tournament like this. And I'm getting a lot of great questions on Twitter. It's awesome. This is, I'll explain again. This is a higher volume betting kind of tournament for me when it comes to round by round matchups. But the amount of money that I'm sinking into this is not nearly the same as what I sink into a normal week of stroke play.
Okay. Let's talk tennis, because we have tennis plays as well. The first of the four doesn't begin for another hour and a half, which is the Gracheva match, which is where we start here. Varvara Gracheva plus 180 against Ons Jabeur. When we do our rankings, Ons Jabeur will be in the top 10 of my WTA rankings. People are familiar with Ons Jabeur. She was in not one but two slam finals. Is that correct? Last year? She was at Wimbledon final for sure. Now I'm trying to remember. Was she also in another final? I believe she was. Was she in the U.S. Open final against Iga? I can't even remember now. But Gracheva is the play at plus 180. Varvara Gracheva, you may remember from our Katie Valinets week when we were hitting Katie Valinets, not once, not twice, but three times. Gracheva was the lady that beat Valinets in the semis.
Old Ons did make the final of the Wimbledon and U.S. Open.
Yes, okay. So two finals last year for Ons. Ons is not playing up to her A game these days, though. And Gracheva has had a really good year with really good numbers. Plus 180 is too big of a dog not to play. So Varvara Gracheva is the first play. One other one on the ladies' tour in Miami. By the way, these are all in Miami. Both on the ladies' and men's side, the second part of the Sunshine Double. Erika Andreeva is a short dog, plus 119. Erika Andreeva is taking on Shuai Zhang. Now, this is really less of a play on Andreeva than it is a fade of Shuai Zhang, whose numbers have fallen off a cliff.
Because you've played against her a couple times this week, right?
Shuai Zhang?
Yeah.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
All right. that's okay. And then on the men's side, two underdogs. We won on Jan Lennard Struff in a match at Indian Wells, I believe it was.
Yep.
We're taking him again, this time plus 167 on Struff. This is a later, these matches are a little later today. He's taking on Grigor Dimitrov. This is a case where Struff's numbers are pretty much similar to Dimitrov, and he should not be nearly this big of a dog. And so got to play by the number plus 167. And then Dusan Lajovic at plus 161. He is a Serbian player who just beat Andy Murray in the first round of this tournament in what was a really impressive showing. He's taking on Maxime Cressy. This is not Cressy's finest service. Cressy usually loves a faster court where he's just unbelievable. But Lajovic at plus 161, that might be my favorite of the four with that number. That number seems way out of whack to me. His numbers have been great. So those are your four plays. Two on the ladies' side, two on the men's side in Miami. All dogs. Again, all underdogs. Gracheva and Andreeva, two Russian players on the ladies' side. And then on the men's side, Struff and Lajovic. German and Serbian, in case you were scoring at home.
Let's make that money.
Will Hill, who has FAU in the Final Four preflop. He's next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.